Here.
Here.
Do we have any additions to the agenda? How about citizen input? Input from the mental health board?
The mental health board today is going to have an interesting meeting on the issues related to mental health or behavioral health and the criminal justice system and the jail issue, and it'll be kind of an extended meeting with some presentations from community providers, and we also plan on having law enforcement there, so it'll be interesting. You've probably been following the issues related to behavioral health in the jail that have been in the newspaper recently. The other thing that from the mental health board that's, I don't think we're passing this out yet, but we have received the final copy of the evaluation of the Parenting with Love and Limits program. That is the program that it's an evidence-based program that we fund to serve kids that are involved with the juvenile justice system that also have behavioral health needs. And this is a really interesting report because they had an independent evaluator look at the program, not the people that we contract with, but an independent evaluator called Hornsby Zeller is the provider that did this. And they actually reviewed, identified a control group to compare the results of the outcomes of the kids that were in the PLL program. And they went through around 4,000 records of juvenile records of kids in Champaign and found 150 some that they identified that match. And that was the control group that was used. So it's a very interesting study. If anybody would like copy, I have a copy of it here. You can look at, but it's the results look very, very good. In October, there will be a presentation of this research, that there'll be a study session that anybody, of course, is invited to attend. And that's about it for the Mental Health Board.
Thank you. Approval of minutes.
I move that the minutes of the last meeting be approved as written.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I have no specific comments this month. Do you have anything else?
Yeah, I have a couple of comments. I just wanted to remind everybody that the next meeting of the Developmental Disabilities Board will be on April 24th. As opposed to the original date of April 17th. This is an important meeting. We certainly want all providers or applicants for money to be there so the board can ask questions if they have questions about the applications. At that meeting, we will have the staff summaries of the applications. Those will go out a week before the meeting, so all providers will get those. And I want to remind everybody that if any applicant has any questions or comments or feels that we've made any kind of a mistake, we're open to correcting those. These are always marked draft so that we can do that. So the April meeting will be an important meeting. The decisions for funding for next year will be made at the May meeting, which will be May 22nd. And there, as we normally do, there will be staff recommendations that will go out on May 14th or 15th, somewhere in that range, so you'll be able to see a week ahead of time what is going to be recommended. And then the board will take action at the May meeting. The last thing I wanted to let people know is that on September 18th, which is the date of our September meeting, we plan to have a public hearing on intellectual and developmental disabilities as the topic. And the point of this is to try to get input from the public as well as providers as to what are the needs in this community, what are the things that we need to be focused on. We also will invite all of our members of the General Assembly to attend. That is typically September. They're not in session. My lobbyist says there's about a 99% chance that they will be in their local offices on that date. So we're going to try to give them plenty of lead time and then use that as a hearing, for the hearing. I was thinking about the possibility, and we'll talk about this later, of having like a joint meeting of the Mental Health Board and the Developmental Disability Board, and then kind of we typically have not a lot. That's a light month. We could quickly do the meeting or actually just have the public hearing as the meeting, and more than likely we would want to do that in the afternoon as opposed to 8 in the morning. So that's about it for me.
Okay. Good news. Any agency information?
Hi, Felicia Guler from DSC, and I brought a couple of flyers today for the 2013 Young Children's Expo, which is called Ready, Set, Grow. It's going to be April 6th at Lincoln Square Mall, and it only happens every other year, so this is the year for it. It's only the second one, and it's really a great opportunity for families to come out and see what's available in our community for very young children.
Thank you.
Brian Rubin flyer that I think I've shared electronically with lots of people, and we currently have about 60 families registered for the training. There's still room for more. It's available on our website too, but there are some flyers at the table that just reference it's planning for the future for children and adults with intellectual and or developmental disabilities. Brian Rubin, I think it's probably been 6 or 8 years ago that we hosted one, and obviously there's lots of new families in the system since that time and updates and information available, so it's typically a very well-attended and very informative. His intent is not necessarily to drum up personal business for himself, but to get people thinking, and then families are then armed to kind of pursue research on their own or ask for some assistance as they move forward. So it's April 9th at the Hilton Garden Inn from 5:30 to 9 p.m.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
The only other comment I have on, I'm sure the staff will communicate this with you, but if you look at the Developmental Services Center's applications, the efforts in our applications this year are to redirect. It's not new things as much as redirecting, so it can barely delineate what you're paying for. Do you know which consumer you're paying for or not? So you see that there's not requested funding for the residential program, it's to redirect that toward the case management and the parking services program over category.
Thank you. Do the approval of the claims.
I move we approve the claims as presented in the packet.
I second the motion.
Any discussion? Now we have to roll call this one because it's money. Go.
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Right. I never get that right. New business. Peter, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I'm going to defer to Lynn to turn on your microphone.
It's kind of old news.
No, you need to turn on your microphone.
Well, I tried to.
There you go.
I'll just hold it down the whole time. That'll help me keep it brief.
You just turned it off.
If you want to just switch it.
I turned on all the others without any problems.
There you go.
Oh, thank you, Mark. All right. Well, that was kind of cool. Well, it's old news, but it's new business because we've only really address this one program at a time as issues have come up, but in the establishing statute for the CCDDB, there is language that clearly precludes the use of this funding for anything covered in Article 14 of the school code, which is special ed services. And the schools have been clever, and because they don't have infinite funding, in doing things like writing letters saying, sure, we won't provide special ed services for this person, if you will. But that is definitely not the spirit of this law. That I think we want it to be very clear by actually providing the whole thing to you all to read. Because there is a great unmet need in this population from ages 3 to 22 who are eligible for school services. The needs are not met for all kinds of reasons, including that the services are not especially well-funded at the school level either. But as the CCDDB dollars get stretched further and further, I think it makes sense to become really clear on what we shouldn't be doing with these dollars. There are 18 applications in front of us, and 8 of them for sure include at least a portion of the target population is covered here, is, you know, could be covered by school services, and then there are 4 others where that may be the case because the age isn't identified. So it's just, so for clarity about what's in the school code, the whole school code is here, and then we have some related issues, particularly because IEP attendance is coming up in more and more applications as one of the means of outreach, including to rural communities. It's a great idea, but it historically has not been preferred by the DDB because it costs a lot of money to send representatives from each agency just to talk about what services are available. So there may be more cost-effective ways to do that. So part of this is just position, but the big background is that it is within the establishing statute that we can't do things like speech therapy and psychology and social work. Those are covered in the school code. And then to my surprise, so were some case management activities like benefits acquisition. That is the responsibility of the school for that group. So anyway.
One question. I didn't understand if somebody chooses to leave school at 18 rather than stay till 22 in that little group, are there services then, can they be covered by our?
I think so.
Yeah, so the choice is still preserved.
I think that's where we're talking about positions.
Okay, so you don't say, you could get those, you go back to school, in other words.
What would be alarming, though, would be to see a whole bunch of people refusing school services because they might get along better with agency providers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that can be true in many cases, but we were about to have a problem with that at the other end with young people where the agencies are just easier for them to work with than the schools. So the schools were saying, no, we're not going to do services. But it was their obligation.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I think if it looked like this was being manipulated to save schools money, then we would, you know, obviously have a conversation about that. But I think that there are many people who choose to leave school at 18 for their own reasons.
Yeah.
And for those people, adult services should be available.
Okay.
So it didn't appear to be at conflict with the rule.
Yeah, so that's kind of on a case-by-case in that age group.
Yeah, because that isn't expressly identified in the rule.
Right, I read all that and I couldn't find that. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
But you said one of the words that I locked in on was obligated. Mm-hmm. Does that mean the school district by law is obligated to do these things?
Yes.
And so just the choice that the district has of not providing that is not sufficient? Okay.
No. They typically, it's not that they don't provide, like one of the complaints that we have heard from families is that they provide it in such a way that it isn't either convenient or accessible.
Mm-hmm.
It's there, but it's not, you know, it doesn't, you know, there are certain, you know, people have transportation issues, you know, things that are described in the law as itinerant tend to be fixed.
Right.
You know, just odd things like that.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of those problems that they come across are things that are provided for in due process.
Mm-hmm.
But I know as a parent myself, due process can take time, and they may not get what they think they're going to get doing due process. So school districts, it sounds bad, but they get away with it.
Right.
So that's how it works.
Well, and relatedly, the funded agencies have people with a lot of expertise in IEP advocacy, and we think that's an appropriate use of DDB dollars.
Yeah.
To support families who are having trouble getting what they want from schools seems to be important.
So. Thank you. Okay. One other thing. Every time you include this PUNS report, it just absolutely scares me to death because I see all these numbers and I see all these cases, and I think about, if I'm reading this right, about what's coming in the future for persons with need. And it's going to be tough times for a lot of you people who provide the services.
Mm-hmm.
So it's scary to me.
That's actually one of the reasons for the idea of the public hearing is to kind of hone in on this. The numbers are scary. We've identified that there are about 125 residents on the list who may need out-of-home residential services with 24-hour supports. And that is, some of those might not be eligible.
But that's just the people who've enrolled in PUNS at this moment.
Mm-hmm. Plus, then you have the LIGAS class. One of the things that I've had conversations with some providers about, and actually we're in the process of sending a letter to Tony Records. The state has done nothing to incentivize providers to create additional capacity. Like if you look at the number of people that are in, if you think about the process of starting a 4-bed or less CILA, you know, you have to purchase a place or rent a place, you have to furnish it, you have to staff it up, then you have a gap between the time when you get ready to accept people. Then you don't necessarily get 4 people all at the same time. You have vacancies. You know, there's just the cash flow issues are enormous, especially the smaller number of people that are in a home. If you have one person missing from a 4-bed home, you have 25% of your revenue is gone. Mm-hmm. So, and they have not done it, and we think that. That's why we're going to send a letter to Mr. Records, is that he needs to be aware that if he wants to build capacity, something is going to have to be done to incentivize the system.
Good.
Mike, I'd like to, as a provider, in fact, Dennis and I are meeting at noon tomorrow to talk about our respective organizations, who could want to lead us, who not necessarily collaborate, but coordinate, make sure that families are knowing what our capacities are to do and look at. I see this as actually more exciting. I'm looking at the PUNS list for the first time in the last year or so is optimistic, because with the LIGAS consent decree, although it's going to be extremely challenging, and again, Peter's letter to Mr. Records and the things that many of us are meeting with Mr. Records to resolve, to get rid of the roadblocks so we can serve the people. But over the next 9 years, the exciting thing about the PUNS list is before LIGAS, there was no hope.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's hope. Over the next 9 years, families are going to get the opportunity to be served in the community through home base or through the SILA opportunity. And the problem that we have in Champaign County is the way the draw is done. For one thing, I think we don't like it. If it's truly blind, that's great, because it's not preferential. But because of our population, when you get 2 people here that have medical needs and 2 people here that have behavioral needs, putting people that have like needs together that want to live together is the challenging thing we have. And I think we need to look at our current people we're serving and how that mix works. So getting around the capital issues and that who's going to, you know, some people, the problem is they don't match up well. And so if we can make sure that making that choice is met, this is a very exciting time. It's going to be very challenging, but probably opportunity for people to get services that would not have had them at all. So I see hope.
Good. I'm glad someone did. Every time I read them, I just wonder, where's the money going to come?
Well, that's the thing I really believe the governor doesn't know what he signed. In fact, I've been told that he just finally sent his turn, said settle this thing and sign it, and doesn't know that the thing about the consent decree, and again, if you're conservative, you don't like this, he signed a blank check. Mm. And it's saying he has no choice now. There's no backtracking. They can't go to court. It's the thing for families that is good is they got Mr. Records that says this decree will be met. It doesn't matter. So he's going to look for help, like your letter, Peter. It says, how do we get around to force the rates to be addressed and people get paid on time? Because if that doesn't happen, providers can't expand, because if they do, they put their current people at risk. And so there's some people that believe that also that eventually the legacy decree will help us solve some of our other issues. Now, again, I tell you I'm excited. I don't know if I'm going to live long enough to be excited to get it all done, but it really is an exciting time over the next 6 or 7 years as they solve these out, because people do get the opportunity to live in the community and remain in their home communities that wouldn't before.
Just one
other
thing to note on that. I have the privilege of working actually with four family groups in the Chicagoland area in addition to community choices here. So that's the other exciting thing, I think, is this potential partnerships between individuals and their families and providers. And it's like, okay, well, we've never done this before, but hey, we've got money. Let's try something new. So I think there is a lot of opportunity to try doing different things. Like, for example, the shared living model I've been hearing about, which is where two people live with a supportive roommate, which can sometimes be more cost effective. You know, so other providers are looking at different kinds of models too, which I think is exciting and gives people more options. So I think there's some hope, but yeah, lots of scariness as well.
Finding answers is always difficult.
It's hard to start a new home for four when you get $2,500 per person. Let's go build it. Let's go buy a new home. I'm going to give you $2,500 to start off.
Thank you all very much. Now, Lynn, was there anything with regard to the cultural and linguistic?
Chandra Somerville is here to comment on the, because she's been collecting quarterly reviews now.
Good morning.
You're on
the air. Good morning. Thank you all to the organizations that have contacted me about meeting to go over your first and second quarterly reports, as well as looking at goals and different types of assistance that you may need for your upcoming year. There are some organizations that have not reported on quarterly, and we will address that to see either what's happening, to see what kind of assistance you may need, or to figure out why you may not be reporting or how you can report on your quarterly progress for your cultural competence plan. And so I had wanted to make sure that I put on the record that we'll extend the date from April 2nd to April 5th, which is that Friday. If you don't have the time, when I looked at the dates, there is a spring break holiday during that time. So I just wanted to make sure that I extended the time so that if you need to get in, you could. And I wanted to make sure that we had this so that you all would be aware in the upcoming year just what people are actually doing to look at how they can be more culturally responsive for all families that we are serving in our community. Do you have any questions?
I have a comment. Just for those of you who aren't aware of what this is all, the cultural competence planning is about, one of the concerns that the Developmental Disability Board has is that people of color are not well served typically. They're underserved, and that goes for both in mental health, substance abuse disorder programs, and developmental disabilities programs. And they're either underserved or they're late identified. There's been several studies about kids with autism, and kids of color are identified, you know, 3 or 4 years later than white kids. So our intent here is to try to get all of the providers to be thinking about that and how they can reach out to underserved populations and make sure kids get identified and people have adequate access to services. And that's the idea behind cultural competence planning. And Chandra has been working with us as part of the Access Initiative, as well as prior to that, she was reviewing our plans and providing input and also helping us restructure how the plans look and what we try to identify.
And one of the things that I can honestly say, we started, like I said, just basic, just making sure that everyone in an organization knew that there was a cultural competence plan that existed, and had you ever even seen it? That was like basic 101. And what was surprising about even those findings was a lot of the employees didn't even know one existed. So that began to raise awareness in the organizations of, okay, at least we need to know that we have one. Now we're looking at how it can be implemented at all of the levels, from the decision makers all the way down to the clients and the consumers and the families that are being served. And so there's an actual template and an actual plan, and there's actions, there's benchmarks, so that we can have clear accountability, not just a checkoff, but ways that we can make progress. So it's progressing. And so it's been about 3 years, and so now we're here. And so this is the first year where, excuse me, organizations have actually reported quarterly on their progress. And so we're going to start delving deeper into that.
I actually thought that was pretty cool. All of the agencies have had cultural competence plans for years. Chandra contacted employees of some of the agencies, and she would ask them, what do you think of your cultural competence plan? And they would say, are what? We found out that it wasn't, even though at the administrative level the plan was there, it hadn't filtered down to staff. And so that was a great idea. Little undercover work.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I heard that one of the DD agencies is going to have you do that training. Is it a 4 month? It's 1 hour per month?
Yes.
Session per month? So, and I think that you made that announcement at a Mental Health Agencies Council meeting, so not all of the DD agencies may be aware that that's an option.
Okay, and yeah. Like we were going to talk about that at there, but I can make that announcement. Yeah. So there is an organization here in town that wanted to do training. They knew they didn't have enough time to do a full day. So they knew that they didn't have enough time to do a 4 hour or a half day. So what we did was I came up with an actual template of how you can do 4 trainings, 1 hour over a course of 4 months. And what I'm learning is that this particular organization that I've done it with, they're retaining a lot more of the information, and they're also reflecting on how it is they can be better. And so each time we go, we start with the basic introduction of what cultural and linguistic competence is. Then we attach it to basic needs and how culture identifies differently by meeting basic needs of different people. And so we talk about that. Then we do a session on cultural dialogues and how your personal experience impacts how you serve and how you respond to when you're kind of being asked to give certain information. And we also go into and delve in a little bit of trauma and how we can learn to create safety and build collaboration and communication. And then the last one, we usually look at practical ways of what you're going to do to actually apply it within the principles and practices and values of your organization. So, and we usually get it done in an hour. I try not to make it too content heavy, but we also make sure that it's not just didactic. We have a lot of conversation and feedback.
As a maybe a follow-up to what Peter talked about earlier, Mike, I guess I wanted to offer this. We'd be willing through Access to come and provide an update on Access, but one of the things I really wanted to talk about is through our evaluation. We're evaluating a number of different things, but we're doing organizational assessments. But what I thought of as Pete was talking was, one of the evaluation things we're doing with kids and their families is what services are they using and taking advantage of. And so we will have I think, some real relative information about what organizations are the youth and families using, accessing, not accessing. And so we do have that information, and would be willing to come and share some of that through our evaluation if you'd like.
I just expect that you'll arrange to have that happen.
We can, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Look forward to it.
You're welcome.
Anything else, Lynn?
Actually, related to that, I know that we have some of the agencies have been involved in helping to train, help more like doing presentations as part of training for local police departments. And I just heard about another one of those yesterday. So that's one way that the DD agencies are already involved, but it's not directly with the youth who are of concern. But I think it is helping to move forward the work of the coalition. And I know that the police chiefs are interested in this population too. So it's nice that some things are happening for that.
Barb, do you want to talk a little bit about the Resource Expo? And
let me get your microphone there, Barb.
Well, there's one at that end table there. But
we want to make sure we get you on the tape.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Okay, good morning. Yes, the 7th Annual Disability Resource Expo. We're starting to plan, and actually our steering committee is going to meet for the first time next week on the 26th at 11 at Zaz over by Marketplace. Anybody that would like to join us, please do. We're always looking for new ideas and new folks to bring that to us. Our veteran volunteer coordinator has already volunteered for this year, so I'm really excited about that. She does a phenomenal job getting the many, many volunteers that we need to make this expo happen. I guess the big thing with the expo this year, and we've seen it the last couple, two or three years actually, is that we're really outgrowing our location and at Lincoln Square, and it's been an awesome venue the past 6 years. It really has. But we stumbled upon some problems last year. The support from the management has kind of decreased over the years, and so we have an opportunity right now this year to look at a new location. And it's got its good points. It's got some things to look at, also of is it a good idea. But Fluid Events, who actually coordinates the activities at Lincoln Square currently, they have purchased a very large building and land, 14 acres of land, I believe it is. It's the old Hundman Lumber on Country Fair Drive. And they are actually renovating it. They're coming along really well with it and plan to be open in June, mid-June, for business. My guess is from talking to Jeff Grant, who owns is that they will eventually be pulling out of Lincoln Square and not coordinating things there, because business will pick up, I'm sure, at the new one pretty quick. It's bringing something unique and really neat to this community that we don't have, and that is a space to have really large events. Right now, the Assembly Hall is pretty much it, and it is so out of range for cost to for most organizations to have anything there. I have talked with Jeff about cost for the expo, and it would basically remain what it is now at Lincoln Square. So that's not bad, considering we would, how many times the amount of space there. It's huge. It's huge. The one, we did a little field trip, a group of us. We invited the NAMI folks and autism walk folks and invited DSN. They weren't able to come. But one of the things we're looking at is, you know, this, the expo is such a huge event, but what would it be like if we could bring in some, you know, there are so many walks and organizations that do some similar things that, you know, could coordinate with us. And actually, I met yesterday with Sue Keller and talked to her about, you know, the NAMI walk. They're already pretty much locked into a place this year, but, you know, she was certainly willing to consider. They always do their walk about the same time, like they're doing it the day after the expo. So, you know, there's some possibilities there for, you know, kind of coordinating some activities with the expo. You know, I kind of did a list, and I don't know if I sent that to you. Did I send? I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Okay, I kind of did a pros and cons list, and
of
course forgot to bring
it. We've been talking about it so much that it's definitely in my mind, but we will organize a written list of the pros and cons.
Right, right. And actually, I have that.
You did.
I just did get it sent to you. But, you know, the one thing it would allow us to do is expand the expo. And the expo has grown from, you know, year one in 2007, we had 53 exhibitors. Last year we had, I think, 77 or something like that.
Plus 11,
we continue to grow, and we turned some folks away last year. We turned at least a half dozen organizations away. We had, you know, I mean, there were more than that. We were able to fit a few in, but, you know, we're just not able to expand where we're at. We are really spaced out with, you know. Some really good things, I think, about this location are that it's really close to the interstate, actually to about three interstates. So you could really expand by kind of opening it up to, you know, other areas to, you know, to join in and to, you know, help support it. Because there's a lot of exhibitors that come that provide services well beyond Champaign County. So that would give that opportunity. Of course, we would continue to have fluid events support, which is just, it's been phenomenal, the support that they've given us. We'd have the space to actually do some bigger entertainment other than just, you know, like a small group on the stage or whatever. One of the things I know that Nancy and I looked at last year is power soccer. We'd have the room to actually, they could play a game there. It's that big. So, you know, there's a lot of space to do things like that, demonstrations. We've always had issues with power, having, you know, electricity for vendor or exhibitors. Every exhibitor would be able to have power to their booth. Jeff is very focused on making this building as accessible as possible. Restrooms are being installed. I mean, some huge restrooms. Right now, we're dealing with pretty much one restroom, well, a men's and a ladies, at Lincoln Square, and they're not extremely accessible. So that, you know, he's talking about putting one in that's got like 30 stalls. It's huge, or a couple of them that way. We'd have the ability to actually know how many people are attending, which we don't have. And have never had because folks come in four different doors. So it's, you know, that's always been problematic. Supporters, our funders want to know that. You know, I mean, our exhibitors want to know that. Is it going to be worth my while to come? And so I think that's important to be able to do that. There's a lot of other things. And like I said, I'll get that list to you. Maybe we can send that out to the board folks to see that, because it's so anyway, that's kind of where we are with location. You know, I think we need to make some decisions on that. The steering committee will be exposed to this information next week. I guess we, you know, go from there. The other thing is that Nancy and I, Nancy Crawford and I, are planning a road trip, an air trip, I guess, and not a road trip, to Newark. Last year we went to the Abilities Conference in Schaumburg, and it was amazing what they had. Newark has a similar Abilities Conference. Theirs is much larger. That's where we were actually able to bring in about four or five new exhibitors last year and, you know, additional support for our expo. So, and we have, I have heard from one of those guys that he'll be back. I mean, he's contacted me. When is it? What's, you know, so it evidently was worth his while.
Are you under contract to Lincoln Square for this year?
No, we are not. We are not. We have the date on their calendar is all at this point.
Okay. Anything else?
Yeah, I was on the field trip, and I do believe that more room would be very beneficial. Last year when I attended the resource conference, it was actually I go to every one, but last year there were a couple of things that I had never seen before. I never knew they existed, to be absolutely truthful. And I think any time you can engage more people in something like that, it does bring more awareness to everyone who attends something like that. So I'm very happy to know that it is larger. Larger doesn't always mean better. I understand that. But in this instance, what I saw last year that was different, I think really was beneficial to quite a few people. So I'm hoping that that will even expand and do more. And again, it was an excellent expo last year. I expect it will be that way again this coming year.
Anything you wanted to say about the anti-stigma?
Okay. Well, we've the Anti-Stigma Alliance met earlier this month, the 5th maybe, somewhere in there, and we talked about the panel that will be put together for during Ebert Fest, and some suggestions have been made on that. We're still kind of exploring that and figuring that all out. The film that will be shown during Eberfest, several of us have had the opportunity now to view that. We did a viewing yesterday. Did you see the end of it? I'm sorry.
Yes.
I have to go back and watch the end. I had to leave a few minutes early. I'm really bothered. But anyway, so the other thing is we're exploring activities to occur, during the film or somewhere around then at the Virginia, near the Virginia. And I need to speak with, I've actually, Sheila's been on vacation, so I couldn't talk to her, but we are wondering about the availability of the PSR room. And there are some individuals that, we did an art show last year, and there are a number of those individuals who are kind of clamoring to do it again. Vicki Tolf has agreed to help coordinate that, and so...
And there's been support. The steering committee has been supportive of the resource booklet, doing another resource booklet, maybe beefing it up a little bit. So we're actually working on a draft of that right now. And also of activities like the art show that was really positive last year, if not, extremely well attended. So we can try it again. It's such a good location, and it may not be there forever. So while we have interested people, interested exhibitors and coordinators, I think it's good to take advantage of the space and do
right.
it.
And we would really like to order good weather because we've never had good weather.
Yeah, we're working on that too.
We'd love to have it outside. I mean, yeah.
Do you have anything you want to say about the Eberfest at all?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. One last reminder, we are meeting on April 24th. Not our normal date. Other than that, if no one else has anything, we are adjourned.